A5. Number 5A.
So you can see that really we had to go through some wilderness period to find out why our findings on the first go were not very conclusive. But step by step, for instance, we could see that we had to take into consideration always the fact that the use of a synonymous term was in most cases determined by the problem stated, which was a negative problem. And so the negative problem was deciding what synonymous term had to be used. So when we had found out that, we had, so to say, a rule for the method. And I remember after we had done our study over about 7 months each Saturday, we came to a point where things got a bit difficult with the Mother Church. They found out that we were meeting, and this was against the manual, that one gathers and are thinking out things about the textbook. So we tried to come to an end, and then Mr. Dolly was asking me and Laurie Sinton, also a teacher at that time, to go over the findings we had got during that winter's work and cut out everything that was not absolutely conclusive. See, we had at that time a terrific list on each synonymous term, ideas that we felt were characterizing the synonymous term. But as I told you at the beginning, we were not aware of the various rules which we had to consider. So we knew that our list was not right, or at least not conclusive, so that we could not really defend them against criticism. So we had to undertake another work, namely to take now these findings, these ideas that went into hundreds, and take the concordance and look up these terms, like power, intelligence, substance, law, and so on, and see how these terms are used in connection with synonymous terms. Can you see the difference now of approach? First, to go out, here are synonymous terms, and we say, we think this is synonymous term is characterized by this and this and these terms. Then we had to take each one of these terms and look up every reference in the whole of the textbook and see how does Mrs. Eddy use such a term. So we had to do all that concordance work again over and over. And by doing that, we naturally could then more easily see when these terms were used as a combination and when they were used as the intrinsic nature of a synonymous term. We'll do that together tomorrow or so with one or two ideas, and then you see it's very easy and very obvious once one knows the rules. So I went up to Manchester where Laurie Sinton lived, and we worked together on this list. And to our surprise, we found that we could cut out practically everything. We cut it down to about 10% of what we had before. And I knew that I had to come back to London, because John Dolly was then teaching a class, and he said he wanted to teach the class entirely on the seven synonymous terms for the first time in his life. So I remember so well that after having had such a wonderful big list on every synonymous term and then cutting them out and out and out it goes and out it goes, one after the other, one felt like stripped of everything at the end, and I had to come down to London with just a very, very short list of ideas, perhaps about 10 or 15 of every synonymous term. I just can visually still see it had room on one page, on one front page, all the seven synonymous terms. I hardly dared to get under the eyes of John Dolan, and I thought, what will he say when I come back after all that long hours of working just with one page, and on that page just a few terms. And he was so happy. He said, yes, he expected that. And he said, let's only work on that which is absolutely conclusive. See? Why? Because if we work on something that is not absolutely conclusive, all what is built on it is always gets weaker and weaker and weaker. And the higher you build, the weaker it becomes until the whole thing just tumbles to pieces. So rather have a smaller list, but conclusive, fundamental, than a big list that is not conclusive, and to build on that foundation. So in the human mind, naturally, there is something which says, I get more and more, the bigger the list is, then I have more, you see. The bigger the list, well, the more I know. Now, we know that in science, in many sciences, you have that law that we should, that with less we can do more. And this is true in this respect. So whenever you study the synonym, and I think the time comes where everyone once has to study the synonyms, just don't let yourself be tempted by the amount of words that you could list, but let yourself be guided by the purity of your investigation and the sincerity of the investigation. And rather leave something open and questionable than to put it down as a findings, and afterwards one doesn't know that it was questionable, and then one takes it for granted, and one builds on sandy ground. And that's no good. The findings afterwards were put into writings, not by John Dolly, because he couldn't be bothered about these things. He always had the big vision, and he said, you do it, you are the ones that can do it. So later on, Peggy and a few friends brought out their findings in the book on the fundamentals of Christian Science. Parallel to it, we did it in German a bit differently with the compendium that later have been translated into English. Those two written statements are of the more or less of the same value. So if later on this week I speak about the compendium method or compendium, I don't want to make it exclusive. With the same reason, I can also talk about Peggy's book on the fundamentals. She incorporated in her book on the fundamentals also the 7 days, and then the 7 synonymous terms, a bit shorter than what we did in the compendiums, and also the 4 orders, the 4 sides. We didn't do the 4, we only have the days of creation and the 7 synonymous term in separate booklets. So I just want to have that understood, that if I say the compendium method, that I mean with the same authority also Peggy's book on the fundamentals, and one and the other is, I would say, in quality just about the same. What we did in those two presentations is to give our findings in a very, I nearly would say, abstract way at that time. We gave, so to say, for every synonymous term, the main ideas that are characterizing each synonymous term. They are always written out as a subtitle in the compendium. We will take it then. And then in the text, there are the variations, the subtones of that main idea that are written out in italics. So when you take these findings, you really have, I would say, a very conclusive result of that long work. Now, so that actually, say, if I would have to write those compendiums again today, they are now 25 years old, I don't think I would change much in the way of findings. There may be perhaps 2 or 3% in it that I would change today, but that's not enough to reprint them completely. They won't harm those 2 or 3%. If the other one is understood, it's quite enough. So the question can be asked, now, what should a student today do in regard to the research of the seventh synonymous term? That comes up again and again and again. And it comes up because you can see that to do the work that we have been doing way back during the First World War, before and during the First World War, was a terrific job. It was a job of thousands and thousands and thousands of hours that we put into it. I remember that not only was I giving those 9 months completely to the study when I was in the study group with John Dorley, just from morning to night to investigate those seven synonymous terms, but also afterwards during the war, that every hour, every free evening, every holiday, every Saturday, Sunday, just went into that study over years and years. I calculated that at least I went about 30 times through all the references on the seventh synonymous term, every time trying to refine them and refine them, weigh them again. Did we find the right answer? Are we really on the right track? Are our findings really conclusive? Can they stand up against criticism? And so, in a way, we spent years of intensive study and devotion to bring out just that short list of ideas. And as this has been a terrific work, the student of today asked, have I to do that too? Do I have to go through that whole study also? Well, the answer is not easy to give. It's not a blunt yes and no. The answer is that in a science, one should always be able to build on the shoulder of those who have gone before. There is a very well-known statement about Einstein that he was asked why he was able to see the theory of relativity, and he said, well, it wasn't so difficult because I could stand on the shoulder of those big scientists, Newton, Galilei, Kepler. They did the groundwork, and he could start where they left off, and he just could rethink what Newton was thinking until Einstein began to see that Newton left out one factor, namely time, and so he could stand on the findings of the predecessors, yes, see, and this is what science should be able to do, that if somebody wants to be a computer scientist, he doesn't have to invent first a computer and computer calculation. He starts where the others have left off, and therefore, in this way, progress is possible. Or we would always tread at the same place, going over the same thing. So that in a way one would think that it should be possible for the students of today to make use of our work and of our findings. make rational use of it. And rather, instead of spending again 7 years or more, as I did, on the study, to spend less time on it and to get the same understanding as what I had after 7 years, and get that in a year or in half a year or even less, and then be able to go on from there. So, in this way, I would say, let's make use of our findings. And I think this was also the reason why we published our findings. If we would have felt that everybody should do the same work again over and over and over, we would not have published our findings. We would have said, this is our private property and our secret understanding. You can have it too, but you go and do it. On the other side, we must also see that the student who starts today must know how we arrived at our findings. And if he doesn't know how we arrived at our findings, he will not be able to stand up against criticism. He would actually build on faith in the discovery of a person, instead of building on understanding what the textbook says. So I would say each one should at least know how we arrived at our findings, therefore should at least know the method and the rules of thumb that have to be taken into consideration in order to arrive at in order to see that our findings are right, that they could reproduce them if they would take the time. And so I would say that each one should, say, take some time and do some research in the same way, go through the a number of passages of the textbook, and see if they would arrive at the same conclusions as we did. This has also the advantage that the student knows where his authority lies, that not a person, a teacher, is his authority, not even the compendiums or the fundamentals of PEGI are authority, but that only the textbook is the authority and is able to defend his standpoint and his findings against criticism. Now, we have to be aware that as this idea is spreading, that naturally the field of the Christian Science field will come up with the same question as they have come up during the last 40 years and say, what you say is not right, and we can prove that you are not right. And they can tell you and say, look here, on page so-and-so, Mrs. Eddy speaks about the power of love, so you can't say that power is a characteristic of mind if it is black on white, the power of love. So it must be a characteristic of love too. Now, we will see tomorrow that this is not so, because this is already a blending or a calculation, and therefore we have to have enough analytical sense to analyze such a combination and bring it apart so that one sees that power is actually only a characteristic of mind itself, but lends itself naturally always for combinations. So these things each one of the students should know from his own research. Naturally, once a student knows the method and the rules, it should be very easy, actually, to go through the synonymous terms and just find the confirmation of our findings. It shouldn't be any more that laborious work which we went through, because we had to find the method, we had first to find the way, we had to go through the wilderness, we had first to cut the way into the wilderness, but we have built the road through the wilderness, and you have a motor car and you can drive through it in 5 minutes. It has taken us years, and it shouldn't take the student as long as that. But in order to be sure about it, I feel that each one should somehow spend some time to get very sure in that method and to see how we arrived at it. Therefore, if we know the findings, what therefore is necessary would be to spend our time in acquainting oneself with those findings. Say, to acquaint oneself what Peggy has stated in the fundamental book or what we have presented in the compendium. And really begin with the concept building. You see, what we have done all those years was not even concept building. It was donkey work, so to say, real hard donkey work, hours and hours, thousands of hours. You have no idea how many hours we spent. When you read it now, you think, oh, these people must have been really dumb to have had to use so many hours to find out something that is so easy. You know, once one knows how to do it, everything is always easy. But when one doesn't know how to do it, it's not so easy. Yes, so what we have done is only find first the terms. Now, you could start right there and really begin with the concept building. How could you do that? Now, the way of doing it naturally would be, for instance, to take our findings, make a list of these findings, have a little pocketbook which you carry along with you, which is so easy to put in the bag or into a pocket, and where you begin, say, to list all your ideas that you have found about mind, and another page in that pocketbook about spirit, and another about soul, and so on. To make such a list, you can take the compendiums and take the main titles in the compendium, like Creator is one of the first one, and put on the Creator all that which we have in the compendium in italics, which are subtones of Creator, like makes and produces and producer. See, that had all to do with Creator, making, producing, and build up such a list, say, first from these findings. If you like to have that list a bit bigger and a bit more voluminous, more round, then there are many other ways to fill in the gaps. For instance, if you take my book on the epistles or on the minor prophets, you have a wonderful reservoir of ideas belonging to each synonymous term. Perhaps you remember in those two books, I always have after each prophet, I have a law stating the law of each prophet, and then the elaboration of it. And in that elaboration, I go through the seven synonymous terms. And there I try to bring in as many variations, term-wise, as possible, to not to repeat always the same few 10 or 15 terms, but to variate them, so as to give a rounder and warmer tone of each synonymous term. I remember in Switzerland at home, the students saw that and they made their list or complemented their list through those terms that are used there in those two books. And they said there are over 100 of each synonymous term that they could find in it. And I remember when I wrote it, I was specifically writing it so that I would bring in lot of little variation in language. Sometimes people say that I have a rather big vocabulary when I speak, and this is mostly due to these books or to the study of the synonymous terms, because through the study of the synonymous term, you begin to listen to the shades of meaning. You know, this thing here that always just, you know, just say to die, you begin to vary according to the aspect you want to bring in. And so one's vocabulary naturally becomes bigger and bigger just through the shadings that one gives to a simple concept. So if you take that into and incorporate it in the list, I think with the minor prophets and the epistles, you get a very big list helping you for concept building. There is another way to expand it even more, and that is to take, say, John Dolly's Bible Talks, where he begins to, or where he epitomizes always the synonymous terms in the biblical history, in the biblical stories, and therefore uses there also renderings that may not be in the textbook in order to bring out the tonality of the seven synonymous terms. So there are various ways and means how you can really have within a short time, say, a list from which to work. Also, try to have also a list of all the counterfeits you can get hold of on each synonymous term. These counterfeits are interesting because we have seen the counterfeits always determine in solving those counterfeits what synonymous term has to be used, because they are the facts about the counterfeit. So make a list of the counterfeits. You have a whole list if you want to take them and see what place value they really have. And in this way, say you build a list. Yeah. I give you some other indication. It's all about method, little tricks you can use in order to get a good list. All right.